Well, first of all, let's go back to the beginning. Where is Daniel in his person? Where is he at? Where does this take place? Where does Daniel 9 take place?
Syria.
Babylon.
He's in Babylon.
Babylon, yes. And what's the modern day country? Well, Persia is the area in the world, but the country itself, where
Iraq.
Yes, you've got it, Iraq. How long has he been here, where he is in?
60 years.
That's longer.
Yeah, probably longer. How did he get there? Do we remember that part of the story?
Exile.
He was taken captive.
Yep, he was kidnapped. Jerusalem was overran by Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonians, and he was taken captive to Babylon and put into the king's service. You know, it's possible that his parents were killed in that whole process. We don't have a whole lot of detail about him other than the fact that he was a committed follower of Yahweh. He was willing to die for what he believed and in whom he trusted. So most people believe he was somewhere between 17 and 20 years old when he was taken to Babylon. He was taken in 605, and we are now at about 538. Anyway, he's between 85 and 90 years old now. This is way back in his age. So what is his situation? What is his role where he is?
He's high in the kingdom. He's like second in.
Yes. Well, Nebuchadnezzar made him pretty much the second in command. When Nebuchadnezzar died, his son became king, and then when he was killed by, actually it wasn't his son, it was his son-in-law, and another son-in-law murdered him and became king, and that was Belshazzar. And when Belshazzar was the one that saw the handwriting on the wall and was killed that night, and the new regime, which was the Medes and the Persians, was instantly put in a position of high authority. Third in the kingdom, that was Belshazzar made him third because Belshazzar was only the second. He was only the king over Babylon. Anyway, he's a foreigner who is high up in the ranks of the government. When the Babylonians fell to the Medes, apparently they kind of released the exiles who had been there, since they weren't the ones that captured them. They didn't care about them, and they left them alone. And some did leave the country, but Daniel stayed. Obviously, he was quite old. And the important thing about him is that he knew his place. He knew what God wanted him to do. He knew that he was where God wanted him, because God was speaking through him to these Gentile kings. The fall of Jerusalem, or it wasn't destroyed at that point in 605, but they were overrun, they were captured, the city was broken into. So that starts what period of time relative to the nation of Israel? We have a label for that. That began
70 weeks of exile.
Anyway, we call that the beginning of the time of the Gentiles. Mm-hmm. With Jerusalem falling, up until then, it was Israel was in the center of God's plan, but with all their terrible sin and apostasy. You remember when the Northern Kingdom fell? Does anybody know the date for that? The smart people argue about that date. Generally, we say 721. But at any rate, so that was over 100 years before now. The Northern Kingdom has been overrun and diluted and not a kingdom anymore. But that did not keep the Southern Kingdom from doing the same thing, becoming idolatrous, just terrible things. And were they warned about this in any way during these 100 years? By
many prophets.
Yes, many, many prophets. And yes, Jeremiah is one who is actually preaching right now. He started preaching in, don't have my chart here for me, but quite a few years before it. He was talking to the Southern Kingdom for all these years. And he was there, and during the fall of Jerusalem in 605, and Nebuchadnezzar, well, it wasn't Nebuchadnezzar, his predecessor at that time. Anyway, they left him alone. It's interesting to me how everybody from the king on down knew what was going on all this time. The invading nation knew who Jeremiah was and that he had been telling them that they were sinning. He had predicted the fall of Jerusalem. And when these guys came in, they left him alone. And this is off of the subject, but the leading remaining Israelis there sort of captured Jeremiah had him under their control, and they ended up going to where? Anybody know where Jeremiah died? They took him to Egypt. One of the things he told them, that God told them, just stay here and I'll take care of you. Whatever you do, don't go to Egypt. So that's exactly what they did. They went to Egypt. And that's where we figured Jeremiah died. So for the people that were here last week, yeah, so he's actually a prisoner of war there in Babylon. So last week you went through most of chapter 9. And do you remember what? Can you tell me what went on there?
Well, I remember the people were not paying much attention to the prophets, and the prophets were trying to
warn them. Okay. Well, now we're focusing on Daniel. What was Daniel doing in chapter 9?
Praying. And he put himself in there as if he, you know, forgive us, O God. In verse 4, he prayed to the Lord and confessed.
Yep, with fasting and sackcloth and ashes, and he was accepting his part as being Israeli, as he was, he's part of that culture. He's accepting and praying as though he was the one that was doing all this sinning.
He's taking responsibility for his people.
Exactly right. So what triggered this praying and fasting and petitioning? What triggered that?
The visions and
the book, observing the book. I don't know.
Yes,
I'm going.
You've got it. Verse 2. Yeah. What? Yeah. Read verse 2 for us.
In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, observed in the books the number of the years which was revealed as the word of the Lord to Jeremiah the prophet for the completion of the desolations of Jerusalem, namely 70 years.
Okay, so there you have it. So how did he know about Daniel? He's in Baghdad. Babylon.
Iraq.
Yeah, Iraq. There you go. He's in Iraq. Jeremiah was in Jerusalem. Daniel was taken in 605. This prophecy happened after 605, right after, like 604, maybe 603. So Daniel wasn't there when Jeremiah was screaming at him and writing this down. How did Daniel know about that?
Yeah, he has the book of Jeremiah, obviously, somehow.
Yep, somehow. But what we don't, you know, what we use for the internet, they had to have a substitute. And what they did is they paid attention to what was written and what was spoken, and people talked to each other, and they were careful to be accurate and even writing things down. So apparently, yes, he had a copy of Jeremiah's preaching. So this is now... this is right at the time. Daniel acts here like he doesn't know exactly when that 70 years started. So when was the Jerusalem, when did it actually fall? When it was demolished, destroyed?
586.
Good student there. So this is approaching the time when they are to be, where their 70 years is up. And so that's what he is praying about. That is the context of much of what's going on here, because the time for them to, that God is going to send them back to Israel is getting close, and Daniel really wants them to understand, and God really wants them to understand what's going on. And since this is the beginning of the times of the Gentiles in which we are still living, God graciously gives both sides picture of what's coming. And so we've already seen all of the dreams that Nebuchadnezzar has had, and what is the basic periods that Nebuchadnezzar's dream revealed? His first dream,
the four kingdoms. Is that right? The four kingdoms?
Kingdoms, yes. And what were they pictured as?
The goat head, the silver chest, the bronze waist or hips, or okay, then the iron, and then the clay.
Iron legs, and the clay and iron feet. Mm-hmm. So that's very interesting. Where are we in that period of that picture of time then at this point?
Mixed clay, iron.
Now, well, in fact, we're explicitly told that the gold was whom?
Babylon,
Nebuchadnezzar, and then the silver was the ones that were coming after him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are now. We're in the silver section of the Medes and Persians. The next group to come, we were told already, is going to be the Greeks. Yeah, so we're still a ways away from the iron, and we're really far away from the iron and clay, although we don't know the timetable for any of that yet. But that's where we're getting to. So, any questions? I hope I brought you along. I'm not, I'm missing my side window here, and I just, where much of my notes are, so I'm going to be babbling here a little bit. One more thing I want to ask about, or talk about, is Daniel's attitude through all of this. How would you describe Daniel's attitude from the point of being taken from his home to never see his home again?
Humble.
And how did he act in his humility?
Under God's will.
Yes, and who else's?
The king's.
The king, yes. He's totally, and they elevate him to all kinds of positions of power. His friends have been thrown into the fire and survived. He has been through the lion's den without being scratched. And here he is still working for this government. And he's totally submissive, and he's giving them all that he has. It's truly remarkable. You don't see any of his nationalism in this whatsoever. And I think that needs to be a lesson for us, because we are, of what nation are we?
Americans. America?
Yeah.
United States.
But what are we beyond that?
Christians.
Yes, we are citizens of
heaven.
Heaven, yes. This earth is not our home. We're just passing through at this point. Our treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. So we need to remember that. Our first allegiance isn't to the United States. It's to God and the kingdom of heaven. So let's go to and read verses 24 through 27 in chapter 9, if somebody would be willing to do that for us. Go ahead. Thank you.
You said 24 through 28?
Yeah. What did I say? 27 is the end. Oh, wait. I'm going to... Yes. This is chapter 9, 24, 27.
Okay.
Yes.
7 weeks have been decreed for your people and your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make atonement for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to still vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. It will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. Then, after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing, and the people of the Prince who has come will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and its end will come with a flood. Even to the end, there will be war. Desolations are determined. And he will make a firm covenant with many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and great offering. And on the wind of abomination will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out from the one who makes desolate.
70 weeks. Now, Daniel has just been driven to his prayer and mourning and supplications to God about the 70 years that were promised for the punishment of the nation. And that's it. Does anybody remember why God said 70 years? What is that related to?
The judgment, basically. He's punishing Israel.
Yes.
It's his time frame for the sins of Israel that he's dealing with. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, and a lot of commentators will relate that to, and I don't have the reference here, but God is telling them that they ignored the Sabbath years all these years, and now the land is going to get their 70 Sabbath years all in a bunch. So he got rid of them to let the land rest. Again, all these things that God has said, he expects them to comply with, and they're just basically ignoring it. But God isn't to be ignored, and we need to remember that ourselves. So 70 weeks now is not 70 years, but 70 weeks of years. So each week is 7 years. So we have these groups. When we read this, we need to be very careful and pay attention to the words. So we've got a reason, or not a reason, but the purpose for these 70 weeks. So let's list those out. What is the first purpose for these 70 weeks?
To finish the transgression.
Finish the transgression.
And to make an end of sin.
Yes.
To make atonement for iniquity. To bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place.
So what he's saying here is, and this is the angel Gabriel speaking, this is what's remaining in Israel's history. 70 weeks, 70 times 7, 490 years are remaining in Israel's history. That sounds pretty short. How long have they been in existence?
Thousands of years. But, they were reborn in 1948.
Well, okay, but it's up until this point. So the call to Abraham was, we figure, about 2000 B.C., and this is getting down close to 500. So far they've been in existence, if you start with Abraham, which we do, about 1,500 years. And if there's only 490 years left, they're three quarters done already. So, interesting thinking there. And of course, it's been more than 1,500 years since this has happened. So either we're already in eternity and sin is ended and iniquity is atoned for and we have everlasting righteousness and the holy place has been anointed. Or else, there's a gap in here somewhere. and that we have to keep in mind. Some people have a problem with that, but we'll wait till Tyler gets here and goes into details on that. But we do want to go through this. So we have all these purposes for these 70 weeks of years. So verse 25, the critical thing is that those 70 weeks starts at a specific time. And what is that time? It's in verse 25.
To restore, Messiah, Prince?
Well, what starts the clock? What starts the clock on this 70 weeks?
Messiah?
No.
Fall of Jerusalem.
No. You might say it out loud.
Restoring the Jerusalem.
Yes. So, somebody is going to make a decree and send the Jews back to Jerusalem. So that's what starts the clock ticking. And where do we read about that happening?
In the news, May 14, 1948.
Well, yeah, but that's not this one. This decree is...
in Ezra, correct?
Yes. Okay. Ezra and Nehemiah talks about that whole process. So there was a decree. Actually, there were four decrees by the Medes that allowed them to go back. But then there was a final decree, which we read about in Ezra and Nehemiah, where they actually were bankrolled. They were given protection to get back there. They were given supplies to rebuild the temple and the city. And we most reasonably understand that to be that period of 7 weeks that took that to happen, that first 7 weeks in this clock. Because it took them a long time to get the temple rebuilt and the walls and the houses restored. And as it said, it will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. And if you remember the story of Nehemiah, how did they go about building the wall?
The sword in their hand.
Yeah. Trowel in one hand and a sword in the other. So it was definitely not an easy time. And then verse 26, the critical thing is... The Messiah what?
Will be cut off.
Well, yeah. Yes, the Messiah shows up and then is cut off and has nothing. And furthermore, the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary. Its end will come with a flood. Even in the end, there will be war. Desolations are determined. So when do we figure that happened?
It hasn't happened. The prince hasn't. Because that's the Antichrist that he's referring to. So the prince.
Okay, but it isn't the prince. It's the people of the prince who is to come.
Okay.
So those people are the ones that accomplished this first destruction, killing the prince, killing the Messiah, and destroying the city.
So 70 AD.
70 AD, and if you... The clock here on the 7 weeks plus the 62 weeks, the end of the 69 weeks, was... Guys have calculated, and it's just right at the date of the triumphal entry. And then after that triumphal entry is when the Messiah is killed, and of course eventually then the city was, you know, a few 30 years later, then the city was totally destroyed. So that's pretty much where this clock stopped then, at 69 weeks. And then so we have a gap between the end of 26 and the beginning of verse 27. So 27 is talking about the prince who is to come. And he will come from the people who destroyed Jerusalem. So we're looking for someone rising up out of the remains of the Roman culture. And a guy who could be living right now. We don't know. So that's where we get the last week. He will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week, but in the middle of that week, he will break that covenant, put a stop to the sacrifice and offerings, and will just do terrible, terrible things until he is destroyed. And where do we find more details about that? Well, the news is one place. Where do we get the final details?
Revelation.
Yes, in Revelation. So that's the setup for the rest of the history of the nation of Israel. And yes, the year I was born, they became, for the first time since 70 AD, were given by the world governments their own property back. And they've been fighting for it ever since. So we have a ways to go on that, and we don't know when that clock starts ticking again. And we figure, we believe we won't be here to see that. Okay, any comments or questions about the 70 weeks?
I've always appreciated how, like, even though we, on a cursory reading, we probably wouldn't have ever, if we were in the time of Daniel, we would have read this and been like, oh yeah, 70 weeks is going to be nothing. It's going to be done in the time of Jesus. But there is that very clear break there where there shall be 7 weeks and then 62 weeks. And so you've got 69 weeks total, and
There's no word about the 70th week. It breaks off right there,
and there is this gap even in the passage where they don't address the 70th week until way later. So even in the passage, despite the fact that they probably wouldn't have seen it at the time, it's very clearly in the text.
Very clearly there now for us who can look back on all of this.
Hindsight's 20/20.
Okay, so this... Come on, where'd you go? Okay, for some reason this is not displaying. Oh, it is. It's a series. So Tyler actually built this up because he was going to cover all of this last week. And obviously, oh my word, this is going to have to be fast. So I've got all of chapter 10 to go yet. We're not there yet. But it is there's not nearly as much important stuff to cover there. That's very important, but it's not as much. So we have the 7 weeks of years. That was for the command to rebuild Jerusalem. You can read that in Nehemiah 2:1-8. Then we have the 62 weeks, which is another 434 years. And that brings us up to Jesus, his time on earth and his death. Of course, we read about that also in Isaiah. So that's Daniel's 69 weeks. So there's 1 week remaining, and we are in that space in the middle there.
Seems close.
Well, it certainly appears to be close to us. So this is the time of the Gentiles. And you can read about that in Ephesians 3 there and in Luke 21. So now we go to chapter 10. And chapter 10 is basically an introduction to chapters 11 and 12. That's where the rest of the details. But now we switch from the history of Israel to the future history of us, the times of the Gentiles. And it's an amazing thing, but I was just let, thankfully, Tyler will take care of that and be a lot better lesson. So here we, in the beginning of chapter 10, we see that Cyrus, and they argue about who that guy actually was. He might be Darius, another name for Darius, or not, but Daniel got another vision. Again, going back to his concern about those 70 years of punishment being ended, he's very much concerned about the nation being ready to go back to their homeland and living for God. So he is still focused on that, and he gets a visitor. He's out on the banks of the Tigris River, and he gets this terrifying scene and a terrifying message. He basically passes out when he sees this guy.
Is it a guy?
Well, a person. But there's a very interesting similarity to the person that he is seeing and the person that John sees in Revelation chapter 4, I believe, is where he sees that. Yes. However, as we read through this, I certainly have come to the conclusion, and most people come to the conclusion, that this isn't Jesus that he's seeing there. So let's read. Can I get someone who will read let's read verses 10 through 14.
I can get it.
Thank you.
10 through 14?
Yes.
And behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. And he said to me, O Daniel, man, greatly loved, understand the word that I speak to you and stand upright, for now I have been sent to you. And when he had spoken his word to me, I stood up trembling. Then he said to me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before your God, your words have been heard, and I have come because of your words. The prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, but Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I was left there with the kings of Persia, and came to make you understand what is to happen to your people in the latter days, for the vision is for days yet to come.
So what strikes us about this section?
Well, it's clearly not Jesus, that's for sure.
Why do you say that?
Oh, he was held back, and ain't no holding back when it comes to the Lord, that's for sure.
Yes, that's pretty conclusive in spite of the similar description that we see of Jesus later. But obviously, people from heaven have appearances that we earthlings have a hard time keeping our composure. When he first started speaking in verse 9, Daniel fell into a deep sleep on my face, with his face to the ground. He passed out. So we shouldn't go wishing for visitations from angels. That's beyond our abilities. Okay, so he tells him right then that he has come, but he was took him 3 weeks to get there because these, what is the term there? The prince of the kingdom of Persia. So who is that referring to?
Most likely a demon.
Most definitely a demon, or several demons. Up there with the kings of Persia. So these guys, these are demonic forces that this angel had trouble getting past. That's just mind-blowing, incomprehensible. We don't appreciate what's going on that we can't see. We really need to be really what's the word I'm looking for? We need,
aware.
Pardon?
Aware.
We certainly need to be aware, and we had better not be taking, we can't be arrogant about this. You know, I'm sure we've all heard people talking about responding to demons and angels. They don't know what they're talking about. We can't be casual or flippant about these forces of darkness that surround us. Where do we read about the forces of darkness?
Ephesians. Look at Ephesians.
Would somebody like to read that for us? That's all right, I've got it right here. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood. And this is talking about our struggle. Part of it is because it's our flesh and blood that we struggle against, but the real struggle is against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. And we're just blind to all of that. Unless God has told us that, we do not know that's going on. And we obviously need to be aware and cognizant that we are part of that battle. And we really don't know what we're doing. But that's why we need to take up the full armor of God so that we are able to resist in the evil day and to stand firm. And we need to do that with all prayer and supplication at all times in the Spirit. And be on the alert with all perseverance and petitions for all of each other. We're all in this battle together. And it's very real. And just because we can't see it doesn't mean that it's not there. I just heard a guy today, this last week, say, if I can't touch it and see it, I don't believe it. Yeah, right. There's a lot that we had better believe that we can't see and sense. Just wait till you get sick once and you'll see how you feel about that stuff that you can't see and touch. The sad thing is how terribly obsessed and actually captivated and that our culture is towards this kind of unseen stuff. It's if you look at the major percentage of entertainment, it's focused on that kind of stuff. It's just become an addiction to our culture. And they have no idea what they're talking about. And they try to make things as ugly and scary as they can. And they have no idea what they're dealing with. And we are part of the battle against that sort of thing. But it's not against the flesh and blood part of it, but against the spiritual forces of wickedness in our culture, in our world.
They don't realize that it's the enemy fighting that war through them.
Through them, yes.
The minds and the hearts, yep. And the young of everyone.
Of everyone. We live. This world has been given into the hand of Satan, and we cannot understand. That's why it's so puzzling to read this. This powerful angel was delayed in his struggle, and God didn't seem to do much about it. He even had to have Michael, who is apparently Israel's personal assigned superpower angel, in order for him to get past these guys, and then he has to go back again and continue fighting it. So these demonic forces of certainly world governments, we're told right here, are fighting against God and against God's people, whoever they are and wherever they are, all the time. We just should be trembling and passing out ourselves more often.
and doing what Daniel did, praying to God. That's where our strength and our, because it's like what you're saying, we have no clue. I mean, we do.
We have a clue. That's it. Yeah. But we can't see it. We unfortunately we can't, because I think we would pass out instantly if we saw what's going on. So he's actually protecting us, and he's protecting us all the time, so that we aren't consumed, that we aren't overrun. So yes, that's Ephesians 6, verses 12. There's been a, for much of my life, there's a couple of verses in 2 Kings chapter 3 that have always baffled me and frightened me. And I'll just read this. This is 2 Kings 3, and this is during Israel, Judah, the southern kingdom's decay, but they were out fighting a battle, and they have the northern king and the southern king went together, and they also aligned with one other of their neighboring kings. I can't even remember, doesn't mention it here. Oh, yes, it is here. So it was the two kings of Israel and Judah and the king of Edom. And they were fighting against Moab, because Moab had stopped paying tribute to them. And so they were going to go to battle. So they, and God was fighting for them up at this point. He had them dig ditches, and the water filled the ditches. And when the king of Moab and his army got up in the morning, because they to fight the battle, they saw this water and the sun was shining on it, and they thought it was blood, and figured that the three kings had ended up fighting amongst themselves, and everybody was dead. So they went running in there to clean up the spoil, and of course it became a big battle, and the battle was too fierce for the king of Moab, so he took with him 700 men who drew swords to break through to the king of Edom, but they could not. This is verse 26, 2 Kings 3. Then he took his oldest son, who was to reign in his place, and offered him as a burnt offering on the wall. And there came a great wrath against Israel. And that ended the war. They quit and went home. Each went home to their own land. So God allows these forces to affect us. We don't know it, we don't see it, but our battle is against not a flesh and blood, but against rulers and powers and darknesses, the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. So we need to be, along with being optimistic and confident in God, we need to watch our walk, watch our prayer life, our holiness, and just know that all of this is a whole lot bigger than we are. And without God, we can't do anything. Our time is up. Thank you for hanging in here with me.